This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I am Todd Mickelson, again sitting in for Matt McNeil, who's off again today. And this is the Matt McNeil Show, but I'll be sitting in. I will be featuring an interview with Senator Erin Murphy that I was able to get her to sit down with me virtually. For just this morning, actually, at about 9:15 this morning. So it's a very up-to-date update that she will be giving us. We'll be talking about some pretty big things going on in the Minnesota Senate and how the Republicans are they're being anti-Minnesotan. And I don't think that's just an opinion. But anyway, we'll hear more about that at the bottom of the hour when we play the interview with Senator Erin Murphy. Right now, a little bit – well, first of all, coronavirus, good news in coronavirus news. It sounds like the summer – even Governor Walz said that this summer might look a little bit more like normal than we were thinking even fairly recently. 2 million Minnesotans are now fully vaccinated. Minnesota remains one of the best for getting vaccinations in people's arms in the country, and our numbers are again. What one of the numbers I think is the most important is the percentage of new cases, to new testing, and the percent the goal is to remain below 5%, and today we're at 4.9%, and it seems like it's getting better and better. As is the U.S. economy, the Republicans just don't know what to complain about. They don't know what to talk about anymore, really, on the national level. You know, all of these things they were trying to pin on Joe Biden are not true. You know, the Hunter Biden scandal, the Joe Biden is you know, addled and in his basement and can't get up off of the chair, and he can barely speak. He can't get through a sentence. And so, you know, Kamala Harris is going to be running the White House. None of these things are true. And then Trump said, if Joe Biden becomes president, the stock market's going to tank. It's going to collapse tremendously. Believe me, it'll collapse in a way like no one has ever seen. And it's just not true. It's gone up more than really kind of ever. And the GDP growth Biden has gotten in basically, or for the last month, is 6.4%. That is, it's not completely unprecedented, but it's extremely rare. That's extremely high. It's exaggeratedly high. The only times it has been that high have been for short periods, but in this case, it looks like it's you know, staying this way for a longer period of time. This whole year, it's just been growing and growing. And if you remember, Trump was bragging that he was going to bring it up by 4 percentage points. And everybody thought that was crazy. Actually, President Biden has brought it up 6.4%. And as far as what happened under Trump, he never exceeded during his whole 4 years. He never exceeded 2.9 growth. And then from 2018 through 2019, it fell from 2.9 down to 2.16%. So that's before the pandemic. So nobody can make excuses about the pandemic hurting the economy, and that therefore wasn't Trump's administration's fault or the Republicans' fault. And a lot of the reason that the economy didn't do all that well under Trump is because the old-fashioned Republican tax cuts for the wealthy, they don't work. They keep doing them, but they don't work. I don't know that the Republicans care about that anymore. It doesn't seem like they're concerned that people know that what they're doing is hurting America. They don't seem concerned that people know that when they discourage people from getting vaccinated and wearing masks, that it's making the pandemic last longer. The Republicans seem like they need and want the economy to keep tanking there, and the best way to do that would be to keep the pandemic going, which really makes it seem like they don't care about Americans dying. So they're not sure what to talk about. I don't know if you've noticed that they've pretty much stopped talking about the border crisis. First of all, it began back when Trump was still president. It started right around election time, and part of that was because of some hurricanes that happened down in Central America, Honduras, places like that, which is one of the Nicaragua, Honduras. Those are the countries where we've been having immigration problems actually for decades, and it got a little out of hand at the end of Trump's term, but they knew that Biden had been elected and was going to become president on January 20th. So the Republicans began planning then how they were going to message on the border crisis. And one of the things was that they were going to finally start calling it a border crisis when it's been a border crisis for many years and was even worse under Trump. Trump was the one who was actually separating children from their parents. But the reason that they've stopped talking about the border crisis is because it seems like it's no longer a border crisis. In the last month, the amount of children being held in these facilities has gone down by 84%. So we'll talk about that a little bit more in depth later on. But now I want to talk about the economy. When the Republicans passed their tax plan, it cut taxes for wealthy. It did not make taxes go up for us normal people the first year, but or the second year. It's basically scheduled to start doing that now, slowly start raising taxes on people who are not wealthy. Well, that's changing and already has changed. The U.S. economy grew 6.4% GDP, and also U.S. household income surged by a record 21.1% this March. That's the largest monthly increase since we've been keeping records in 1959, that was pretty much at the height of the middle class, the rage in the middle class, when households were doing really great. It was first tracked in 1959. Never in one month has household incomes gone up as much as they have this last March. And this is all because of the COVID relief package, also known as the American Relief Plan. What it did is it put stimulus checks in people's pockets. That means that people had money to spend, and that helps small business. That helps American business. It also provided money for schools and restaurants to reopen and handle the pandemic, basically. It also this wasn't going on before. This wasn't going on when Trump was president. It also provided a lot more money for small businesses, and of course that was managed. There was an attempt under Trump to do that, but it was very mismanaged and a lot of abuse going on. This is much better managed as far as the distribution of the money. It also provided boosts for the child tax credit and also funding to surge vaccines, get them into arms. There was virtually no plan. The Biden administration reported that there was absolutely no plan from the Trump administration to start to get vaccines in people's arms. So the Biden administration didn't take over that. They had to start it because the Trump administration never started it. The vaccine was developed. The Trump administration tries to take credit for that with their Operation Warp Speed. But Pfizer, at least, has said they were never part of Operation Warp Speed. They were doing this on their own with a lot of funding from Dolly Parton, actually. So Dolly Parton's done more to help America through the pandemic than any part of the Trump administration. I don't think she gets mentioned enough for her part in it. But other things, tax cuts for people making under $100,000. This year, if you make $75,000 or less, you will pay zero federal taxes. No federal taxes for Americans who make $75,000 or less. That's, you know, kind of the vast majority of Americans. If you make between $75,000 and $100,000, so you're doing a little better, but still not a millionaire. So between $75,000 and $100,000, you will pay 1.8% in federal taxes. And that's not on your whole income. You're not going to be paying 1.8% on $100,000. You're only going to be paying that on $25,000, anything above $75,000. That's how these progressive taxes work. That's also how the fourth and hopefully what's going to become the fifth tier taxation in Minnesota works. The fourth tier is for anybody who makes, it's something like $153,000 or less. Now, I don't know about you, but I consider that a very good income. If you're making $153,000 a year as an individual, you probably have a nice car and some extra toys you don't need, like maybe a motorcycle or huge entertainment system. That's the kind of money that you're making a lot more than you need just to get by. And still, the fourth tier taxation that was put in place back in 2012. I believe it was, you still don't pay any more. You're still not part of the fourth tier. Now, if you make, say, $155,000, your taxes are going to go up by, I think it's about 1.5%, but only on that $2,000 that's above $153,000. You don't all of a sudden start paying a higher rate on your whole income. You only pay the higher rate on the income you make above where the line is. And that's not explained enough either. It's very, you hear about when back in the 1950s, the rate for millionaires was 90% tax rate. You had to pay 90% of your income. Well, you didn't pay 90% of your income. You paid 90% of your income above, I don't know what it was, but it was, $1 million. Then you start paying 90%. That's how it was in the 1950s under a Republican president, by the way. But anyway, so yeah, it's going to get felt more and more throughout this year. People, again, the vast majority of Americans paying no federal taxes or very little federal taxes, even if you're, doing a little above what the vast majority of Americans make and all of these other things. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about that. I am going to be playing the interview that I had this morning with Senator Aaron Murphy at the bottom of the hour. But right now, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Stick around. We'll be right back. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It sounds like a cool bass guitar pedal that began that song. I'd like to know what that is. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil today again. Hopefully he will be back soon. We're kind of playing it by ear at this point. but I'm glad to be sitting in for him today. I always enjoy doing this, and I hope that you enjoy it. We were talking about the economy and a lot of the things that it has done. First of all, it's people are businesses are doing better. People are spending more. They got checks in their pockets, and it's making them able to go out to eat, go out and buy some things that maybe they couldn't afford to buy before. It's already cut child poverty in half. It's helped child hunger. It's helped people stay in their apartments, not get evicted under all of the the horribleness that the economy has been going through for the last year. We also talked about record-breaking household income in March, surging higher than it's been since we began keeping records of it in 1959. The stimulus checks, the money for schools and restaurants, the money for small businesses, boosts for the child tax credit, and getting vaccines in people's arms. Also, tax cuts for the actual, there's kind of not a middle class currently, but the vast majority of Americans are actually getting tax cuts. The Republicans kept saying that their tax plan did that, but it didn't. And as a matter of fact, it's starting to raise, it's supposed to start to raise taxes. It's probably not going to happen because, Joe Biden's here to save the day, basically. But the legislation that is causing all of these good things to happen has already been passed, and it's already going on, and people are already feeling the benefits of it. And absolutely not one single Republican voted for it. All Republicans voted against it, but they're trying to take credit. Kevin McCarthy is trying to take credit. He's both at home and, since he's the Speaker of the House, he's kind of more of the national spokesman. And they'll make tweets about how great all these things are, making the people who see that tweet think that it was them that got it pushed through, when in reality, they tried to stop it. All of these things, the Republicans tried to stop cutting child poverty in half. They tried to stop it. And then when President Biden mentioned that had happened in his statement to joint Congress, basically what would be the State of the Union, when he said that, Republicans sat on their hands. Democrats got up and cheered. And normal people at home got up, and my wife got up and cheered. I don't do that when I'm at home. That's, that's just silly. No, it's not. My wife got up and cheered. I was writing notes, actually. But, the tradition is that the president says something that's good for America, and everybody stands up and applauds. That's the tradition at the State of the Union type of addresses, and the Republicans it's very symbolistic that they chose to stay sitting when even child poverty being cut in half was mentioned by the president. So they seem to want failure. They seem to want America to fail. I know I keep saying that. It's just become more. I mean, it kind of seemed like that for a long time. I mentioned last week too that Rush Limbaugh famously said when Barack Obama became president, Rush Limbaugh famously said that he hoped Obama would fail. And but then, of course, when Trump became president, Rush Limbaugh said, the Democrats want Trump to fail. If Trump fails, America fails. But apparently that wasn't true back when, the black guy was the president. I'm sure that's not what Rush had a problem with. I'm sure that's not his problem with Barack Obama, wink, wink. But anyway, Rush Limbaugh was saying it years ago. It really seemed like that. 40 years ago, Ronald Reagan said something to the effect of, the scariest words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." So Republicans have been trying to basically say that the United States government is a bad thing, and they've been saying it more and more for the last, actually starting in the 1950s, but it really went on steroids under Ronald Reagan and got even worse when Newt Gingrich basically declared war on Democrats. Democrats were always caught off guard by this. You know, Clinton was trying to work with the Republicans and made compromises that he, you know, in retrospect, probably shouldn't have. But now what's happening is the Republicans, I don't think they're thinking this through very well, because they're announcing ahead of time that whatever the next thing is, they're not one of them is going to vote for it. No matter what, no Republicans will vote for, we're trying to get the Jobs Act put through, which is basically infrastructure. You would think Republicans would be in favor of infrastructure, but they're only in favor of infrastructure if they can get credit for it, and they don't want to fund it. So they're in favor of magic infrastructure, but real infrastructure costs money, and when it gets taken care of, people get happier. Even people who have to pay, if you are rich and say, you know, like for instance, I have a motorcycle. Now, I don't need a motorcycle in order to survive, but I love riding a motorcycle. And there are certain roads that I just absolutely boycott, including Highway 394, which is the main route between me and Minneapolis. I won't even ride my motorcycle on that road because it's miserable. And that's because we have not been keeping up with our infrastructure. I would rather have the money that I had for buying the motorcycle, instead of getting a tax cut, I would rather have that tax cut go into the kitty and get the roads fixed so that I can enjoy my motorcycle. So, you know, everybody gets more happy when infrastructure is built up, and now we need to modernize it as well. When the GOP promises to provide absolutely zero votes for it, that's telling the Democrats that, okay, well, then we don't need to compromise. We're not even going to talk to you then. We're going to pass whatever we want. And if you're saying you don't want to negotiate and you're not going to vote for it, and whatever negotiations we would do would not make you vote for it, well, we're not going to negotiate. You know, so I think it's a good thing. I think they're shooting themselves in the foot, and I think they're helping the Democrats. So I don't think that, as per usual, they're not thinking it through very well. And they think, you know, they're losing their brain power. They've been losing it severely for over a decade. But we're going to switch to state politics. When we come back, I'm going to play my interview that I was able to procure this morning with Senator Aaron Murphy. And we'll get to talking about Minnesota state politics on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Stick around and we'll be right back. All right. If you were falling asleep at the wheel, I think that beginning of that song just woke you up, huh? You're driving, okay? Stay awake. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil, listening to the ads. Some of them in Minnesota, it's always hard on radio to make ads during the springtime because you always want to say, you know, now that the warm is here, celebrate spring and, you know, and all of that. And then the weather oftentimes in Minnesota doesn't cooperate. So. We want to be talking about the weather, but, you know, the weather's not cooperating, so we're not going to. One good thing, I mentioned that we're going to switch over to Minnesota politics. The governor has done a great job navigating the state through the pandemic. We're at the top of most lists in the United States on how we've handled getting vaccines into people's arms and things like that. And of course, the Republicans have been trying to take away his emergency status, beginning, man, pretty much almost immediately, beginning for sure at the beginning of last summer. Now, of course, we can see that that would have been a huge mistake. And in fact, the governor's navigating the state through the pandemic is very highly approved by Minnesotans. And today he announced that summer can probably look more like a regular summer. And if we keep at the rate we're at with getting vaccines into people's arms, we're going to be able to have the state fair this year. Might be a slightly different version, but still, that I know I'm not the hugest state fair fan, but whenever I do go, I end up loving it anyway. You know, you gotta. I love to get a corn dog. I also like to get the corn on basically corn cob on a stick is always good. So we'll be able to do that this year. And right now, though, in the up in St. Paul in the Capitol, we're coming to the end of session. There's 2 weeks left. It's supposed to end on May 17th. It's very unlikely that it will. And Republicans are doing all they can to make sure it won't. They seem to do this now as every year. They just throw sand in the gears in the last couple weeks before a session ends, and it always makes it go longer. So it's very frustrating. But I have an insight on a few things going on that are very interesting that just are happening right now, just happened at the beginning of this week. And I was able to get an interview just this morning. So it's a very up-to-date update from Senator Aaron Murphy from the Minnesota State Senate. Let's listen to that. So here we are with Senator Aaron Murphy. I knew you back in the day when you were heading up the Minnesota House Caucus years ago when I ran. You were so helpful to me back then. Thank you. And thanks so much for being here. I know that your schedule is insane. So hello, Aaron Murphy.
Hey, Todd Mickelson. It is so good to be together again. And my schedule is busy, but no more busy than any other Minnesotans right now. So I'm delighted to join you. I'm delighted to spend some time with you. And we have done many years worth of good work together, starting when you first ran for the Minnesota House and going forward. And I expect more of that in our future. So I'm thrilled to join you today.
Great. So much to talk about here. There's only 2 weeks left in the session or so. And I know that big news right now is that the Republicans are trying again to pass voter ID. Can you give us a little insight on what it was like to be a part of that probably very contentious and long talk on Monday?
So before the session began, Majority Leader Gazelka had expressed some interest in moving forward with this policy voter ID that Minnesotans resoundingly rejected in 2012. They went to the ballot box and voted against it as a constitutional amendment. And they were crystal clear that after listening to months worth of debate and understanding what it would actually mean to put this policy in place, that they said no. They said hell no. And so that we're spending precious floor time right now debating that again is proof to me of the Republican Party's interest here in Minnesota, just like we're seeing across the country, that they want to limit access to the ballot and suppress the vote. The debate on Monday was wonderful from my perspective in that our members came ready to talk about not just why this is the wrong policy for Minnesota, but we also spent some time talking about why it and how it disenfranchises voters, how the big lie that the Republicans have continued to push rhetorically has undermined people's faith in our elections, that our elections in Minnesota across the country are safe and secure. There is a known outcome to the last election, but more importantly, that big lie that Republicans continue to push, including Senator Newman, is what drove that insurrection on January 6th in our nation's capital. And we have to not only stand up for the truth for our fair and secure elections, but also to fight for what is true and right in this country. And that's what we did on Monday. And I was really, really proud of our caucus.
Oh, well, that sounds great, actually. I know Senator Scott Newman is the one who's trying to push for this. He said earlier in an interview earlier this year that he knows it's not going to pass. Obviously, the House is not going to pass any such thing. But he quoted saying, coming forward with the bill in 2021 will give the voters in the state of Minnesota one more opportunity to evaluate their elected officials and see whether or not their elected officials and those running for office support their views on any number of issues. So I think, I don't know, I see that as a DFL win. I think you probably agree because, like you said, Minnesotans already overwhelmingly voted against this back in 2012.
That's right. And I think we have to be really clear that the goal that they are trying to solve when they talk about voter fraud is about voter impersonation. That's is the only issue that would be solved. And as we have done our research in Minnesota, there is no evidence of voter impersonation happening in the state of Minnesota. And so they're bringing a giant solution that would limit people's access to the ballot to solve a problem that doesn't exist in Minnesota right now, voter impersonation. And so I think we're right on the issue. I think we're right and with Minnesotans on this. But I also think that they're bringing a giant hammer so that they can talk about voter fraud, which is a part of their rhetoric going into the next election.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was one instance of voter impersonation, and it was actually a Republican impersonating his own mother, who I think she had passed away or something. But I don't think there's any case of it in Minnesota.
Right.
Also, I know there was Senator Matt Klein. He challenged Senator Newman and said, okay, let's add to this that you have to declare that Joe Biden is the president. And they refused. And I know that the Republicans refused to pass a statement on that earlier in the session. So basically what you're seeing is Republicans refusing to admit that Joe Biden won the election. Is that true?
Yeah, it is true. And Senator Klein, my colleague, put that question directly to Senator Newman. And not only did Senator Newman not agree that Joe Biden is the rightfully elected president, but he contradicted a statement that he'd made earlier in the session about the purpose of this legislation. So I was really proud of Senator Klein for being direct with Senator Newman so that Minnesotans, if they were paying attention, and as we go forward, we will share that information. But to understand the purpose of this is not to protect the election, but instead about electioneering in the future.
Right. Yeah, pretty unbelievable, the times we live in now. There was also something that people are pretty nervous about happened, I believe, yesterday in a conference committee. I know, tell us again what conference committee that you are a part of.
I am serving on the Agriculture and Rural Policy Conference Committee, Agriculture, Rural Policy, and Broadband Conference Committee. I'm the lead Democrat on that committee in the Minnesota Senate and happy to serve on that conference committee.
Okay, well, tell us a little more about how the broadband issue is going. I know back years ago, I think six, seven years ago, there was a commission that the governor put together and they came up with a budget for broadband in every nook and cranny of Minnesota. And then the Republicans got in power and decided to fund it with $0. And there was such an outcry in outer Minnesota, outstate Minnesota, that they ended up having to compromise that. Has there been more, are the Republicans still pushing against funding for broadband?
It's such a great question, Todd. In the committee, when we got our budget targets, the budget for ag is $40 million. It's all flat funding for the budget, $40 million dedicated to border-to-border broadband. The task force that you're talking about said that to meet our goals that we put into policy will require $120 million. Mm-hmm. So they have taken one more step, and it amazes me every time they take such a tiny step. because they claim to be the representatives for people who live in rural places. And yet this issue, which has just been highlighted and featured in the course of the pandemic, is something that they continue to nickel and dime. So in the committee, I actually moved an amendment that took that $40 million and said, if there's federal funding available, let's take it to 120 and get the job done. And they tinkered with it a little bit and accepted it. And we stretched that further on the floor in the debate to say, let's make that commitment real and say that we're going to use federal funds from the American Recovery Act for this purpose. And they declined that and replaced my language with a study. Mm-hmm. So they say they want to get it done. They're not taking the meaningful steps to do it, but we are in the Democratic caucus in the Senate. We are pushing very hard and believe if there's federal funding available for infrastructure and for broadband infrastructure, we should complete this job in this budget this year.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I'm a small business owner. We are completely dependent on the internet. And so I wouldn't have been able to start my business if I lived in outstate Minnesota. And so just, I wonder how many people out there have an idea as good or better than mine to start a business who are unable to, not to mention all the school kids that really got hurt over the...
It is now critical, right? For business, for agriculture, for education, for higher education, for healthcare. We use broadband, we use the internet in all those modalities, not to mention how we have used it in the last year to stay connected in the course of the pandemic. So it is as necessary as water and as electricity, and that we aren't, you know, doing everything we can to complete that for Minnesotans is a real failure on the part of the Republican Party.
Yes, and I think in elections, I keep repeating that I think the DFL needs to capitalize on this issue more, because it seems to me, when you look at all the issues, the DFL is the pro-outstate Minnesota party. The Republicans are not doing anything in the best interest of outstate Minnesota. I need to let you go soon. I just wonder if you have, I was going to ask you about what happened yesterday in the environment committee, where all of the sudden the Republicans announced that if the MPCA does not drop their clear car rule, which is a very popular thing here in Minnesota, they're going to not put up funding for a bunch of agencies. I have a list here. They have to do with, the Bowser, the Board of Water and Soil. They keep water clean. The Minnesota Zoo, the Science Museum, the Department of Natural Resources. They're not going to allow funding for any of those agencies. Can you explain a little bit what that's about?
I can. We have, over the years, Todd Mickelson, the legislature has become much more of a leverage-oriented body. And so when we get to this point in the session, people make enormous claims saying, we will not do X unless you give us Y. And we're seeing it in a variety of places as we get to these last couple of weeks. The clean car rule is a good example. We won't fund the state agencies or these things that Minnesotans care about unless you give up something that we disagree with. By the way, there are a lot of Minnesotans who support the clean car rule, lots and lots of Minnesotans who are looking for answers for a more sustainable climate. And this is one of the ways that we can move that policy forward, move toward sustainability in our climate. So they're trying to trade climate sustainability for funding for the things that Minnesotans care about. And I think that's a really bad trade-off, and it's a terrible negotiating strategy, but we're seeing it over and over again in this body. The other really clear example to me is the continued use of leveraging emergency powers, which I will say, you know, nobody's enjoyed this last year. It's been painful. We've lost a lot of lives, but those emergency powers have helped us navigate a global pandemic that we've never experienced before. So it's kept people alive. We have used tools to keep people safely in their homes, like that eviction moratorium, a mask mandate, et cetera. And I know it has been a bone of contention between the administration and the Republican Party, but to continue to use something like the clean car rule or emergency powers and saying, we're not going to do anything else, we're going to just hold here, doesn't matter the consequences until you give in, mm-hmm. is a kind of negotiating that really feels a little bit like hostage taking.
Yeah.
And I think we have more in us than that. We don't have to be that brutal, but brutal I would say, is the way that they're negotiating right now.
Yeah, it seems to me the Republicans think that they're holding the DFL hostage, but in reality, they're holding all Minnesotans hostage. This would close down all the state parks at the end of June. That's what they're threatening to do. At a time, I know Kelly Morrison was in that conference committee, and she said, you know, the parks are even more important now when everybody's so exhausted over the pandemic. They need to get out to the national or the state parks.
That's right.
Right in July. So,
listen, the good news about it, Todd, I'll just say before we go, the good news is that Senator Ingebrigtsen made it crystal clear. He made it crystal clear for anybody paying attention that this is the price that we expect. We will close the state parks. We'll close the zoo. We will shut down this part of government unless you give up this policy piece that you think is important. I'm glad he made it so clear for Minnesotans, because then they can evaluate and judge.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, I should let you go. I see it's 9:30, and I think you have more fun to get back to.
I do.
So thank you so much. I'm so glad that you're in the Senate now, watching you move around different places and finding you now in the Senate is, I think, really great for Minnesota. I've always seen you as being a really tough, hard worker and fighter. And thank you so much for all you do in the Senate. And thank you so much for spending this time when you have such a hectic schedule here at the end of session.
Thanks for including me, Todd, and I'm happy to visit with you anytime. Thank you so much for everything that you're doing for Minnesota.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We're going to take a short break, and we'll come right back and review some of the Aaron Murphy interview. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. We just have a couple minutes left here before the top of the hour break, where we'll have some national news items updates. But talking about reviewing some things that were talked about in the interview with Aaron Murphy. The list of unfunded agencies that the Republicans are threatening to unfund is the Board of Water and Soil. They're known as Bowser, BWSR. They basically are looking out for clean water. They study the watersheds. They try and make the different watersheds more even. They mostly it's clean water. They were a big part of cleaning up water down on the Minnesota River back, 12 years ago now. And you know, drinking water. So the Republicans don't care about clean drinking water. The Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. These are our citizens that get together to try and talk about Minnesota resources. So there, it's still a longer list. The Minnesota Zoo, the Science Museum, it's really quite crazy. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. It's crazy. So we'll come back and I'll go through some more details about this, because it's pretty unbelievable. But we'll take a short break and we'll be right back at the top of the hour. This is AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. I was a little thrown off. We didn't have the cool music going, but I think we're back now. We played an interview that I was able to procure just this morning from Senator Aaron Murphy. She gave us a good insight on what's going on here at the end of session. And it sounds pretty frustrating. The Republicans, the Minnesota Republicans, are again pulling their silly antics. They're two of the big things that exploded just this week. They brought up voter ID again. The Senator Scott Newman is the one who's talking about bringing back voter ID. He knows it's not going to pass. He knows the House is not going to pass it, and he knows even if the House did pass it, the governor wouldn't sign it. And he knows these things because all Minnesotans overwhelmingly voted against voter ID back in 2012 when the Republicans actually got it put on the ballot to be included in the Minnesota Constitution. So they had a lot of confidence in it back then, and they were completely shot down. And now they are hoping that we all have forgotten about that, and they're trying to bring it up again. Basically, so just like what Senator Murphy said, basically so that they can keep pushing their lies. When they talk about voter ID, then they talk about all the, you know, the problems with the vote. You know, it was rigged and all this stuff, and it's just not. And that's why this particular issue has always been talked about as a solution to a problem that does not exist. And as a matter of fact, they also know that voter ID would disenfranchise a lot of voters, people of color, college students, and the elderly who have trouble getting to the polls and all kinds of things. So they know that a lot of these people don't have a license. Of course, then they say, well, we're going to provide a voter ID. Well, there's a lot of people who still aren't going to get that. So they know it's going to disenfranchise people. They know it's one of the things that they need to do in order to cheat, in order to stay in any power. Another thing worth noting was that this was not included in either the House or the Senate elections finance bills. All of a sudden, Senator Scott Newman pulls it out on Monday and wants to start talking about it. And he's quoted, you know, basically admitting that he knows that it's not going to go anywhere. But he's quoted as saying, quote, coming forward with the bill in 2021 will give the voters in the state of Minnesota one more opportunity to evaluate their elected officials and see whether or not their elected officials and those running for office support their views on any number of issues. And voter ID is one of those issues I am certain will be discussed as we enter the 2022 election cycle. So basically, he just wants he's admitting right here in so many words that all he's thinking about is elections. All he's thinking about is, first of all, you know, manipulating the election so less people can vote. But he's also saying the only reason I'm doing this is so that we can talk about it in the election cycle, so that our base can be all happy that we tried to fight for this thing that is never going to happen, that most Minnesotans voted against a few years ago. Same thing with the other main thing that we were talking about, the Minnesota Republicans basically holding Minnesotans hostage by refusing to fund many environmental agencies. They only brought that up. It was right before a judge was to rule on it. Now I have too many stars the judge was just scheduled to rule on it. Just days before the judge is to rule on adopting Minnesota's clear car rule. So they don't talk about it until the very last minute. And that's because they know that all of these things that are making the session not be able to end on time, all of these things is what everybody's going to be talking about because it's the big fights. It's the thing that makes the big news. And so they bring it up just days before the judge was to rule on this clear car rule. And they caught a lot of people off guard, including the MPCA, who was basically charged with coming up with this by the governor. And the Republicans knew that. They've known it for this whole session. They don't talk about it. And then all of a sudden they bring it out here when there's just a few days left to talk about anything, and they know it's going to be part of the news as to why the session is again going too long. Now, the different things that they're talking about not providing funding for, the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil, who make sure that drinking water is clean, the Minnesota Zoo would shut down. The Legislative Citizen Committee on Minnesota Resources, we talked about that before. Conservation Corps would shut down. The Science Museum would get shut down. the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency would lose funding, and the Department of Natural Resources. You know, these are things that I think all Minnesotans agree that we want and need. And what this would also mean is that all Minnesota state parks would close. They'd close at the end of June, right? Basically, when people are starting to go to them for the summer and fall. And the Republicans are having a hard line on this. They say, Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen, he wants it absolutely stopped. Again, now I have these great notes and I have stars by the main parts that I was going to read, and there's just too many stars. But the hardline moves come just days before the administration allows to vote on the clean car issue. Of course, Kelly Morrison points out that closing the parks would be devastating, especially this year, because people weren't able to go to them last year. And Representative Rick Hansen, he is in the Minnesota State House, and he's always worked on environmental issues. And his comments were that this is a new low for the legislature. He's been there for an awful long time. I think he's been there for nearly 20 years, and he's calling this a new low for the legislature. And as far as the MPCA goes, Commissioner Laura Bishop, in her testimony, she defended the agency's handling of the Clean Cars rule against Republican assertions that her agency was unwilling to compromise or entrust the matter to the state's elected lawmakers. It was never supposed to be entrusted to the state's elected lawmakers. The agency was has held numerous public meetings around the state and received more than 10,000 comments, she said. And the rule has had extensive input and review. Most states that have pursued a zero emission vehicle program have done it by rulemaking, she said. But here, you know, we're getting we put it on trial. We had meetings all across the state. She goes on to say that the MPCA were directed by the governor to undertake this rulemaking. That's the policy of this administration. And the Republicans, again, they knew this, and they know that most Minnesotans want this. This is similar to the California rules, where we're going to try and get rid of emissions. The clean car rule is, I think California, I can't remember exactly what their rule is, but it's going, you know, one Republican a couple of weeks ago said the Democrats are trying to get rid of the combustion engine. And yeah, we are. Because the combustion engine over the last 120 years has made the earth, talk about immigration problems. A lot of the reason that there are immigration problems is because of climate change. Talk about the probably getting into the trillions of dollars that are having to be spent now because of wildfires being worse than they ever have, hurricanes and storms being worse than they ever have, flooding in coastal cities. And, you know, how much money is being spent on climate change? And this is one thing that is necessary to do. And you know, the United States always drags our feet because of money and greed. And you know, it reminds me of President Carter putting solar panels on the White House, and then he did that in 1979. And just, you know, within a year, Reagan comes in and orders them all to be taken down. You know, what's that all about? So anyway, we're trying to keep it to Minnesota here. The new rule, again here, I'll say it's similar to the one in California and more than a dozen other states, aims to help drive down heat-trapping greenhouse gas emissions from transportation by requiring automakers to increase deliveries of electric vehicles to Minnesota for sale. This is Governor Walz. That's why he directed the MPCA to develop the rule as part of his emphasis on addressing climate change and the need to cut global warming gases. this is all done in the daylight. The Minnesota Republicans know that this is all going on. When asked about the standoff on Tuesday, the standoff happened on Monday. So Governor Tim Walz was asked about it on Tuesday. He said it makes no sense. Quote, there's irony in that they are going to hold up the environmental budget for a proposal that cleans the environment. The idea that you would shut down government, shut down funding because we're doing what 15 other states and most of the rest of the world has done just doesn't make any sense to me. And he even says, if you don't want to buy an electric vehicle, don't buy one, you know, but you don't have to make the rules for all the rest of us. But that's what the Minnesota Republicans seem to want to do. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Again, I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. And we're just going to take a short break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Right, some Canadian music. Also heard April Wine a little earlier. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil on the Matt McNeil Show for today. We were talking about Minnesota politics, and my wife and I were discussing, like, why is this happening? I don't understand. I can't see what game the Republicans are trying to play here. I know that I saw Kurt Dowd, that there's a legislative preview happens usually in December or January before the session starts. And I go to it every year, and it has the leadership from both the DFL and the Minnesota GOP. Year before last, after the 2018 election. So this was, you know, very early in 2019, probably in January of 2019, Kurt Dowd, who became the minority leader instead of the state House Speaker, because the DFL swept the election in 2018. And he said it was just a fluke because of Trump. And, you know, everybody voted against Trump. And you know, we'll come back in 2020. Now, of course, the House didn't come back. He still is the minority leader of the House. But he really seemed to believe that Minnesotans really want Minnesota Republican politics when all evidence shows otherwise, if not almost exactly completely opposite of that. And why they want to talk about voter ID when Minnesotans have shown that they're vehemently against it. They won't talk about things like background checks to buy guns. The polling in Minnesota, in rural Minnesota, is 81% of rural Minnesotans are in favor of requiring background checks to buy guns. It only goes up the closer you get to the metro area. In the cities, it's 88% of Minnesotans agree with it. You know, also in 2012, they tried to ban gay marriage in the Minnesota state constitution. That was overwhelmingly knocked down by Minnesota. It seems to me that, especially starting in 2010, you know, after at that time, nearly 30 years of Ronald Reagan starting it by saying, you know, the scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And Republicans keep saying, you know, government is bad. We need, you know, government can't handle anything. If you put the government in charge of anything, they, you know, can't handle it. So they keep pounding that, you know, that's what they do. They actually learned that from the Nazis. If you keep repeating the lie, people start to believe it. You know, that was basically thought up by the Nazis. Not saying the Minnesota GOP are Nazis, but sometimes they seem to, you know, not mind copying tactics that were used by the Nazis. So they keep lying, and right now they keep lying. They think if they keep repeating the lie that that the elections, you know, there's tons of election fraud. They, if they keep repeating that, people will agree with it. I don't know. I just don't see it. But it seems like since they think government is bad, I think they're having trouble finding candidates. And you can see that a lot of brain power was lost at the beginning of the Tea Party thing. You know, a huge outrage. When Barack Obama was elected president, our intelligence agencies said that they're expecting to see a rise in white supremacy. They think that that's the – back then, in the end of 2008, they announced that the biggest threat to the United States security is white supremacy. And they thought it was going to get worse because, you know, we had our first black president. And they saw that white supremacists were probably going to start crawling out from under their rocks. And here we are, you know. It began very early. 2017 is when the big incident happened, that somebody died because of white supremacists ran a bunch of people over with their cars. Now you have Republicans trying to, you know, make it so that that driver would not be punished because they think it's okay to use a car as a lethal weapon and drive it into a crowd of people. There is seriously Republicans pushing. I think they even got it passed in I can't remember what state, you know, it's crazy. But talking about the brain power being lost, I think, you know, less and less of them want to run for office. And so then I think that they're actually delusional. I think a lot of the Minnesota Republican elected officials really believe that they're doing their party a favor. They seem to think that most Minnesotans agree with them, even though the facts prove otherwise. And it's a little nerve-wracking. It's a little scary because obviously on January 6th, they were expecting that to overthrow the government. They were, I mean, talk about, I don't know, if they want the United States to become a banana republic. It seems like there were people in the Pentagon and in the White House who were expecting things to change on that day. I think they were expecting that the military was going to take their side. And I think they were expecting to overthrow the election. And I don't know how far they thought it through. I don't know how it would have worked. You know, were they going to kill? Were they expecting these people to kill elected officials? Were they really expecting them to go in there and drag the vice president of the United States out and put him in a noose and hang him? I don't know. I'm starting to think that maybe they were, because they seem to still think that things are going to go in their direction when all of the facts show up. They're saying things the policies of Joe Biden are so unpopular that it will make the Republicans overwhelmingly win all elections in 2020 and 2024. But all polling, it keeps coming out every week, and it stays right at sometimes in the 80 percentile approval of these policies. And a lot of that is because of what we talked about last hour, so many benefits that people are actually seeing happen right now. The economy is growing way faster than anyone was expecting. Taxes, this is going to happen even more. People are going to notice more and more that the vast majority of Americans are going to have their taxes lower, and they're going to start to see infrastructure get fixed. Their businesses are going to do better because people have spending money in their pockets. Their restaurants will do better. You know, the Republicans keep repeating that Americans apparently hate that idea. I don't know what they think Americans want. Do they think Americans want to stay in a lockdown under a pandemic? Do they think Americans want that? I don't know. I can't figure it out. Actually, people are talking a lot about this Liz Cheney thing. Liz Cheney is third in power in the House of Representatives, and it sounds like they're going to try and kick her off of that by the end of this week. And Joe Biden was asked, I think the actual question he was asked is, do you have any comments on what the House, you know, the Republicans kicking Liz Cheney out of her position? And his comment was, I don't understand Republicans. So I'm with you, Joe. I don't think there are very many people who do. And I think the amount of people who do is dwindling fast. But I know people say, well, 77% of Republicans believe that Trump should still be president and they believe, you know, all of this stuff. But I kind of want to point out that Republicans are losing tens of thousands of people a month, are just embarrassed to be a Republican, and they're getting rid of their Republican affiliation. And Fox News has lost tons of their viewership. You know, now Rachel Maddow always wins in the ratings wars. And Tucker Carlson has virtually no sponsors anymore. So, you know, it's not going well for them. Why don't we take a break? There's a few more things that I would like to talk about and point out that are very interesting things going on in the immigration and border situation that we'll go a little bit more in depth when we come back. We're going to take a short break here at AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil, and we'll be back very soon. Don't go anywhere. Traveling in a fight at Combi. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, is what you're listening to right now. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil on The Matt McNeil Show. Remember when in the 1980s there was a lot of talk in the news? If you had the 6 o'clock news on, often you'd hear names of countries like Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua. These were the main countries that are basically right in the center of America. They're at the just south of Mexico. And they're the history going on in the 1980s was during the Ronald Reagan administration. And we changed a lot of policies. Part of the new effort of the United States to overthrow the Sandinista government in Nicaragua and roll back the region's leftist movements. The Reagan administration temporarily stationed several hundred U.S. soldiers in Honduras, and it trained and sustained Nicaragua's Contra rebels on Honduras soil while greatly increasing military aid and arms sales to that country. The Reagan years also saw the construction of numerous joint Honduran-U.S. military bases and installations, and this greatly strengthened the militarization of Honduran society. In turn, political repression rose. There was a dramatic increase in the number of political assassinations, disappearances, and illegal detentions. And it got nasty, and it was especially nasty back then. It increased throughout the 1990s. The U.S. involvement in Honduras set the stage for Honduran immigration to the United States. That markedly increased in the 1990s. And then post-Reagan era, Honduras remained a country scarred by a heavy-handed military, significant human rights abuses, and pervasive poverty. And still liberalizing tendencies of successive governments and grassroots pressure provided openings for democratic forces. They contributed, for example, to the election of Manuel Zelaya. It gets super complicated there. But basically, you know, the We didn't have a whole lot of migration from those countries coming into the United States until the 1990s. And it was because they were running away from, you know, things. When you're talking about disappearances, that means just people just disappear. The country begins to be run by military. Actually that area that we first kind of forced banana fields down in that in the late 19th century. That's kind of where the term banana republic comes from, because the people were so repressed, and they were so repressed back then by the United States making sure that there was tons of bananas grown down there, because we can't really grow bananas in the United States very easily. And there was an author who went down there, and in some writing that he did, he came up with the term banana republic. So literally, they're banana republic. They're the first banana republics. And that's what people are running away from. And what's been going on when the Biden administration announced that Vice President Kamala Harris would be put in charge of this. What did she do? No, she didn't buy a camouflage hat and jacket and go down and have photos taken of herself at the border. She didn't see that as being a helpful thing to do. What she saw as being helpful was to start to talk to these countries again, talk to the leadership of these countries that people are fleeing from. Another thing is, climate change was a big part of this. They can't grow food down there very easily anymore. It's changed so much that, they could maybe grow some different types of food, but they can't make the transition quick enough. So people can't farm anymore, and they lose their farms. They have, they don't know where to go. They're scared of the military occupation. They're scared of their kids disappearing and most likely getting sold into the sex trade somewhere, who knows? They're hungry and scared. And on top of that, two really bad hurricanes hit. And that's what back at the very beginning of November, I believe, was when this really scary weather happened down there. And that made a lot more people start to come up to the United States, because if they stay down there, they're going to die. And so Kamala Harris began speaking with the leadership of these countries to try and come up with ways of improving things so that people wouldn't feel the need to flee. And so that's why the administration says they're working on the core, the root of the immigration problem. On top of that, immigration reform is getting put into the infrastructure bill. And this is a lot because of what we said earlier about Republicans saying, no matter what, we're not going to vote. You're not going to get one vote for that infrastructure bill. It's called the Jobs Plan, I believe. And the reason it's called the Jobs Plan is because when we start building infrastructure, it's going to create a lot more jobs. And especially if we change things, like the administration says, build back better, we're not going to go back to making, oil and coal-based things. We're going to put a lot of emphasis on energy that we need to switch to, that we should have decades ago. And so anyway, when the Republicans say, you could negotiate with us all you want, but we're not going to vote for this. Okay, well, then we're not going to negotiate with you. So I think it is emboldening the leadership of the Democrats, because now they're putting immigration reform. The immigration reform is probably very similar to what the Senate passed years ago, back when the Democrats, of course, had control of the Senate. And the Republicans refuse to pass it. Actually, I think I might have that backwards. It might have passed the House, and Mitch McConnell sat on it in the Senate. Either way, it kind of doesn't matter. The immigration reform, there was very good immigration reform written years ago. Republicans refused to pass it. Now the Democrats are putting that inside the infrastructure bill, which it will pass with no votes from the Republicans. And so we could have some really serious and good immigration policy changes going on. But another thing, and if you notice, the Republicans were trying to talk about immigration as the big new thing. That was their plan, and they made it into a border crisis. They never used that term during the Trump administration, even though there was a border crisis. They wanted to wait until Joe Biden became president. But they're not really talking about it anymore, and that's because the number of unaccompanied migrant children held in these jail-like conditions by U.S. Customs and Border Protection dropped nearly 84% in the span of 1 month, underscoring the significant progress made by the Biden administration after reaching record high custody figures just at the beginning, you know, in January and February. I'm reading here. The Biden administration fielded a flurry of criticism from Republicans who blamed the influx of migrants at the border on the president's immigration policies. Against the backdrop of migrants in overcrowded conditions along the border, officials refused to call the situation a crisis. They described it instead as a challenge. Now I'm talking about the Biden administration. They said, no, this isn't a crisis. It's a challenge. Yeah, it's really bad right now, but we're going to take care of it. And it looks as though they did. Basically, they're saying that, you know, we took control of the situation because the Trump administration made it into such a huge mess. And now that we've got control over it, it's going in a good direction. Joe Biden himself suggested that the situation with unaccompanied children is now under control. He said, quote, "It's way down now. We've now gotten control. Significant change in the circumstances for children to and at the border." Now that there's a new administration in town, all of a sudden, the amount of unaccompanied migrant children goes down 84%. So the Republicans have very quickly gone silent on the situation. So what do you say we take another break and we'll come back? I have a couple other encouraging things to tell you. When we return on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back soon. The progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. There was one thing that I forgot to mention, of new news that just happened this afternoon. You know how we were talking about how the Minnesota Republicans are holding everything hostage and threatening to not fund the zoo and the science museum and a bunch of environmental agencies. The way they're arguing about that in a conference committee. A conference committee is at the end of session here. It's when the House is in session, they write bills. The Senate is in session, they write bills, and then at some point they gotta put their bills together. So there's usually a similar bill in the House to one in the Senate. They bring that together and they talk about it in a conference committee, and they normally negotiate and work things out and come up with an overall bill to send to the governor. And that happens in the final weeks here of the session. And the way it usually works is one day the Democrats are in charge and the House is in charge. And the next day the Senate is in charge of the conference committee meeting, which is usually a hearing, but it's more like a meeting because the public is less a part of it, but But in these conference committees, because the Senate is held by the Republicans and the House is held by the Democrats, it's basically going back and forth between Democrats and Republicans. And there's so little time to work this stuff out. And of course, now they only have 2 weeks before they're supposed to adjourn this session. And so you would think every moment is very valuable. Yesterday, the Democrats were in charge, and that's what we were reporting on, and that's what you heard Senator Aaron Murphy talking a lot about. Well, today, the Republicans are supposed to gavel it in, and they just decided not to. They didn't show up. They didn't even schedule it. It normally happens at 1 p.m., and the Republicans just didn't think it was important to have today's conference committee hearing. So, again... I don't know if they think that looks good to Minnesotans. You know, hey, you elected me to do stuff down here, and I'm going to refuse to do stuff. I don't get it. I wanted to talk about another thing that just is happening nationwide. A judge says that Bill Barr misled on how his Justice Department viewed Trump's actions in the Mueller report. The judge, Amy Berman Jackson, said in a ruling that the misleading statements were similar to others that William Barr, the former attorney general under Trump, had made about the Mueller investigation. This is getting to be some kind of more and more serious stuff. You know how you feel like, what's going on with all these things? I keep hearing that Trump is a criminal. I keep hearing Bill Barr's a criminal. I keep hearing, you know, half of his guys have gone to jail. Michael Cohen went to jail. I keep hearing that Trump is going to be indicted. And when is it going to happen? And why is nothing happening? It looks like they're all going to get away with everything. Well, basically, this judge is accusing now William Barr, who is the attorney general under Donald Trump, that he lied to her. He certainly lied to the American people. These are things that we all already knew, but now they're starting to go through legal channels. I'm just reading here from a New York Times article. I'll say her name. Judge Amy Berman Jackson has accused the Justice Department under William Barr of misleading her and Congress about advice he had received from top department officials on whether President Trump should have been charged with obstructing the Russian investigation and ordered that a related memo be released. This memo likely doesn't exist because he said it did, but it probably doesn't. Judge Amy Berman Jackson of the United States District Court in Washington said in a ruling late Monday that the Justice Department's obfuscation appeared to be a part of a pattern in which top officials like William Barr were untruthful to Congress and the public about the investigation. We're talking perjury at the very least. She's what William Barr said is that he, after the Mueller report, which of course, you know, he summarized, even though he summarized it in 4 pages, even though it was 400 pages, and he summarized it basically, you know, a day after he received it, so he didn't even have time to scrutinize it or really even read it, and he summarized it, said, you know, no collusion, nothing to see here. He saw that President Trump didn't break any laws, didn't do anything wrong, didn't talk with the Russians. In fact, I don't even know if the Russians did anything to affect this election. And we all knew he was lying, of course. But he said that he was then told by the Justice Department that nothing should happen to Trump, basically. And he said that he had memos and stuff like that. So she's telling him to turn over that evidence of that, those memos and proof of that, of what the DOJ recommended to him to not do to Donald Trump. Now, of course, she's completely calling his bluff because she knows that none of this exists. And it's going to prove at the very least, like I said, it's going to prove at the very least that he committed perjury. probably numerous times. And if you think, oh, you know, he's just going to get away with it, well, it's happening now. Trump's been out of office for a few months, 3 months, and Bill Barr is already getting into some pretty deep trouble here. I will again remind you, like I did last week, Nixon's attorney general, he went to prison in 1977, almost 3 years after Nixon resigned. Nixon resigned because he was about to be impeached, and he didn't want to be the one and only United States president to be impeached. There was an impeachment earlier, but it was rescinded later on by Congress. I think that was Jackson. I can't remember, back in the 19th century. So it would have been pretty unprecedented. Also, it was quite sure that Nixon was going to then be implicated in the Senate and therefore forced to leave office. He definitely would have been the first president to have that happen to. Of course, now we have Donald Trump being impeached twice, and then the Republicans getting his back in the Senate, so he did not have to leave office. But a lot of the reason he didn't have to leave office is because of these lies that Bill Barr told, that the judge is now basically making him reveal. And so it's going to be very difficult for William Barr, and I think there's going to be a lot of hearings, and it's going to cancel Scooby-Doo on Saturday morning like the Watergate hearings did. And I think that there's a pretty good chance that Trump's attorney general, just like Nixon's did, is going to go to prison, but it's going to take a little bit of time, just like it took in the 70s, 3 years, almost 3 years before his attorney general went to jail. So other good news, we talked earlier about COVID news. Numbers are looking better. I think I heard 57% of Minnesotans have begun to be vaccinated, and one of the best in the whole state as far as getting vaccinations into arms. The governor said that this summer could look like a normal summer, and we probably are going to be able to have the Minnesota State Fair this year. So get vaccinated. Wear your mask. Let's make this thing go away, and let's have some fun. So you've been listening to the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Stay tuned for Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.